Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight from the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Oh,
Rebel Motorcycle Club and White Palms.
The first time I heard that, I was completely blown away. Instantly destroyed in the fact that they weren't British. Because what really pissed me off, and it really did, is that they've that bass sound, he talks about him, he like him Peter Hook and all that sort of thing, I can hear that. But he's got so much of that Jack Bruce, he's got so much of that late 60s bass thing going
it's
on.
Attitude, short
scale, really loud, very distorted, you know. And I love that guy. I love the bass in that, you know. If you listen to it, I mean, people talk about garage rock, they talk about shoegazing and all this. It was like a revival of that type of thing, and the garage rock, certainly. And but listening to it, it's completely rooted in the 60s, as far as I'm concerned, or the late 60s.
But for me, the bass, you know, I sometimes think of a bass as a euphonium, kind of like, especially the short scale, but it's like he got...
We say it's like an
elephant, elephant's trunk, yeah. And it felt like he got the elephant and twisted his trunk up at some point. And I had this image of just like wrestling. Because it just stops you in your tracks at... And also the lyrics as well, just talking about Jesus, you know, are you going to come back, all that kind of stuff. It must have really connected with people at that time, because this is what intrigues me as well, that the debut made an immediate impact throughout the world. It was part of that garage rock revival kind of thing in the early 2000s. And isn't it fascinating that nobody knows when they write music if it's going to connect in a small way, in an intimate way, or in a massive fire across the world, you know, bang, take that, yeah.
Well, as soon as I heard it, very fortunately, I went to see them at Leeds Festival with our two sons, Joe and James. And I remember I was protecting James at the front of the stage, and Joe ended up being carried, and they were only little lads, and there was Joe being carried on a crowd surf from the back of the room to the front. We were crushed against the barriers, and I'm telling you one thing, I think it's one of the loudest gigs I've ever been to. I saw Deep Purple, I've seen a lot of the very loud bands, but I'm telling you, I was right in front of his bass stack, this Beans bass stack, and it was monstrous. He had two Ampeg SVTs with 8x10s on full, and it was like... It was moving your guts. You could feel all your internal organs being rearranged.
Well, I never really knew his name until I looked into this, because I've always liked Black Rebel Motorcycle Club and I've never really known their music. And then I realised they were named after Marlon Brando's motorcycle gang in the 1953 film The Wild One. Mm. So that's where they got the name from. Now, the bass player's called Robert Levon Bean, B-E-E-N, not with an A.
No.
I'm not talking about Mr. Bean.
No. Has been.
Oh, here we go. It's the first track. And also Peter Hayes, who's on guitar and vox. And Bean and Hayes, they met at school in San Francisco, the Bay Area of Lafayette. But Hayes had a turbulent home life, and he'd often sleep in his car outside Bean's house, you know.
Is that right?
And after about a year, Bean and his dad persuaded him to come and live with them.
Wow.
So I just thought, I really liked that story, by the way.
Well, they seem very close, and they look like almost brothers when they're on stage, because, of course, everybody's very black and leather clad and heads down and sweaty and, you know, dank looking.
And I like the fact that they let the music speak, that even, I think they're kind of a little bit shy, but what I like, and I can relate to that as well, is that they just get in the music and the music becomes them and they are the music, you know? Mm. And that, for me, is Black Rebel Motorcycle Club.
Well, what I think the guitar as well, Hayes' guitar is sort of very... He uses a lot of overdubs and he uses super heavy strings. So he doesn't do a lot of solo thing. It's all about rhythms and layers, and he has a lot of distortion boxes, and his guitar setup is massive. Mm. If you look at it, he's got a big stereo rig and everything. And I was reading an article about it the other day and it was quite fascinating. But they're a very intriguing band, and if you've never heard them, I'd check them out, you know.
Yeah, and I want to check them out bit by bit. I don't want to just gorge on them. I want to find them in an organic way and get into the music a song by song, almost, you know, instead of going, oh, there's a band, I need to hear them. I want them to find me as well, as much as me want to find them.
When I get off of this mountain, know where I wanna go. Straight down the Mississippi River to the Gulf of Mexico. To Lake Charles, Louisiana, little Bessie girl I once knew. And she told me just to come on by if there's anything that she could do. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring a leak. She mends me, I don't have to speak. And she defends me a drunkard's dream if I ever did see one. Good luck had just stung me to the racetrack I did go. She bet on one horse to win, and I bet on another to show. Hey. She tore it up and threw it in my face, just for a laugh. Now there's one thing in the whole wide world I sure would like to see. That's when that little love of mine dips a donut in my teeth. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring a leak. She mends me, I don't have.
Band Up on Cripple Creek, as opposed to Shit Creek.
Yeah. Okay, moving along swiftly. That was from the band's eponymous second album, also known as The Brown.
Exactly. There we are, you see. I've got you.
Okay.
No, I thought it was really
that
funny.
That was actually... No, I just realised that. You know, you're digging the hole and you go, oh, shit.
Moving swiftly
on. Okay, November 1969. That was a single. The band. It's the band. Now, if you haven't heard of the band, it is not just the band. It's the band, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they've got of. They're held in such high esteem. Why is that?
I think they were the first Americana band. Interestingly, they were produced by a guy called John Simon. Of course, funnily enough, my name is Simon John, so it's like a very odd thing.
But upside down.
Yeah, but John Simon, who produced Big Brother and the Holding Company and various other people, and I think he really captured the band in a great way. I mean, I think they were only using four track then. And to consider that record, I mean, we saw the classic albums series, didn't we?
Yeah, and
this was on it, on YouTube. It's available. It's great to watch. And Robbie Robertson's there, and he's actually, you know, he's only got four faders to mess with. He said, well, the backing vocals and the bass and the drums are sort of on this one. And then, you know, the wah-wah clavinets on this one and the main vocal. It's incredible that they could actually create that great sound and have a fantastic balance at the end of it with just that number of tracks. Of course, like the Beatles and you know, Jeff Emmerich and Sir George Martin did a great job on those Beatles records with very small number of tracks. But, it fascinates me that it was all done live, albeit with a number of takes.
Yeah.
You know, because they used to use multiple takes because, you know, the stories of them are amazing. They're 50 takes or something like that.
But they could do that because they could afford that privilege because they rented houses, didn't they, and just set up and recorded in situ in houses.
Exactly.
I think
this was recorded at in Hollywood at some villa or something with a pool and all that sort of carry on. It's amazing, you know.
But that's a great concept, and that's the one thing I really like about the band is that I feel that they're a team. They're very much individuals, and I think Robbie Robertson always stands out as being a bit troublesome from all the, you know, he's got a bit of an edge. And then you've got the story of them sort of all being like backing, they were members of a band and they were backing rockabilly singer Ronnie Hawkins and they were called the Hawks. And one by one, all members of the band sort of joined this backing band over a period of years. And then they separated from Hawkins and then they released a few singles as Levon on the Hawks. And then they were called the Canadian Squires. And then Bob Dylan came across them as a unit and booked them to sort of to back him on his US tour in 1965 and his world tour in 66. Then after all that, they moved to New York and then they recorded the Basement Tapes, which formed the basis for Music from the Big Pink in 1968. Mm. So I love that journey. And that's the thing. I think sometimes people are a bit too fast food conscious these days in terms of the music, and that you've actually got to live, you've got to learn your craft, get on the road, work with different people, and that your album will come out of you. If you're an artist and you're working with some different artists yourself, maybe even as a backing, at some point, if that's in you, it will come out. You've just got to allow time to mature and find your voice. And I love that the band for that influence, for that inspiration, actually.
Well, there's no doubt that when they were backing Bob Dylan on that first tour where he got things thrown at him and he said he was a Judas, didn't he? You know,
moving
away from folk music.
It's horrific, the way he was treated.
And but they learnt a lot from him in the songwriting, you know, and storytelling, because that's all about storytelling. And as I said, it was really the birth of Americana. And Levon Helm, such a great drummer, great singer, very sloppy style. He always looks as though he's just about to fall off the cliff when he's playing, you know. He's like, it looks like it's not going to quite happen, and everything's really sort of laid back. And the bass, especially on that, I know we talk about bass a lot, but again, it's got that elephant thing. Obviously some sort of short scale with flat wind strings, but it's got that thing going on, you know.
Yeah.
And that was the first track ever to use a clavinet with a wah-wah pedal.
Yeah. Now, isn't that incredible?
Well, Latchy Doley, is he called?
I'm not
Australia.
Sure how you pronounce his
name. Yeah, you know, a great keyboard player from Australia. Hopefully we're going to meet him when we go to Australia in November on our tour. And he's got this whammy thing, and he's got this lever, which is similar thing. He's got this lever on it, and he's pretty well known for using it now. So
yeah.
Great stuff.
Great sound. And I like also that with that album as well, that some people view it as a concept album with the songs focusing on people. And Robbie Robertson said, this is his inspiration. He says, we're not dealing with people at the top of the ladder. We're saying that. And what about that house out there in the middle of that field? What does that guy think with that one light on upstairs and that truck parked outside? And he said, these are the kind of people I'm curious about and what's going on in their lives. And it's just like the story is following this person that drives a truck across the whole of America, and he knows different characters he drops in on, and it's just following him with the camera. So that's where he was approaching it from a songwriting perspective.
Great songwriter.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong, I learned how to get along. And so you're back from outer space. I just walked in to find you here without that look upon your face. I should have changed my coffin lock. I would have made you leave your key if I'd have known for just 1 second you'd be back to bother me. Oh, now go walk out the door. Just turn around. Now you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to break me with desire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, not I will survive. Yeah, as long as I know how to love, I know I'll be alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. I will survive. I will survive. Of my broken heart, and I've spent oh so many nights just feeling sorry for myself. I used to cry, but now I hold my head up high, and you see me with somebody new. I'm not that stupid little person still in love with you. And so you thought you'd just drop by and you expect me to be free, but now I'm saving all my loving for someone who's loving me. Oh, now go walk out the door. Just turn around. Now you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to break me with desire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, now to live, I've got all my love to give. I will survive. I will survive. Yeah, yeah. We'll be right back.
I Will Survive by Cake. What a bananas bunch of bongo, big bongo banana heads. That's how it makes me feel. They are just so comedically, beautifully wonderful.
Well, that, the vocal, it's so dry. And unfortunately, the swear word in the middle on the Spotify version has been taken out, but that is really a beautiful part of the whole song if you listen to the original. I love his guitar playing. It's so raw. He's got this big, obviously the huge high action, and it's like big-bodied old semi-acoustic. I don't even know what it is. It's like some Gibson or other, but I don't know. Or it might be something really cheap. But it's got a sound to it.
Yeah.
And then that mariachi trumpet.
Well, do you know what? It reminded me of Tom Knott from the earlys, you know, because it's just that kind of, like that trumpet line that's got, it's not quite perfect. It's got character, you know. And it's all in the right side because we're listening on headphones. Like that guitar and the trumpet's coming in on the right side only. And it's really odd. It sort of makes your head go a bit strange.
Well, it does. Well, the whole track. And the first time I heard that, I was actually in Santa Monica and I went into this record store. It's quite a long time ago now. And I went to and it was playing. And I said, who the hell is this? And so it's a band from sort of up the road. Obviously, California's up the road. And I said, well, I want to buy it immediately. It sounds great, you know? And then I bought it. And then I bought every album since I wonder what made
them decide to cover that, because obviously that's a disco anthem, which was a huge major hit for Gloria Gaynor back in 1978. I mean, she sold 14 million blinking copies of that song.
That's a lot of copies, man.
And it was written by, this is interesting as well, two guys called Dino Ficaris and which sounds like one of the Daenerys for Ficaris, you know, like a dragon thing.
Yeah.
Ficaris, isn't it?
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Game of Thrones name. And Freddie Perrin, who's part of Berry Gordy's corporation, and it was a collection of writers and producers put together to write for the Jackson 5. So Freddie Perrin, who co-wrote that song, worked with Tavares, Heaven Must Be Missing an Angel, and also Peaches and Herb, which is one of my favourite songs. Not so well known, but Shake Your Groove Thing. Do you know that? Shake your Groove Thing. I was into disco, it's okay. But just going back there, so you've got this absolute magnificent disco anthem, and then you've got a band like Cake going, let's do a cover. I wonder when they decided to do it.
I bet they were laughing. I bet they were laughing when they were doing it. But I think it's just a great alternative cover. And I love the fact it just shows complete disregard for the sensibilities of the original production, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like a fresh thing. But that's what art is. And you've taught me this, you know, where you get something that is like established and normal and you stick it in an unusual place.
Yeah.
And that's what I consider this track to be, if you know what I mean.
Do you know what we need to play on the show as well? Is a band very much similar of Cake, but not sarcastic, a little bit more European in its influences, was a band I saw at the Big Chill Festival years ago called Nouvelle Vague, and they do treatments of songs in a completely different style, like Blondie, Heart of Glass, and just very much along this vein. But I like Cake better. But Nouvelle Vague are very, 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 very good at doing that as well.
Cool.
Piled high. that has grown in our garden, stroking for so long. Whenever I was a child, I wonder what if my name had changed into something more productive like Roscoe. Been born in 1891, waiting with my aunt Roseline. Thought we were due for a change or two around this place. When I get back, they're all mixed up with no one to stay with.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was Middle Lake and Roscoe from the second studio album, The Trials of Van Occupantha.
Oh, 2006.
Mm.
I got the album when it came out, and for me, it just takes me right back to a moment in my time when I was living in Manchester. Beautiful. The harmonies of the band are just, they rock me like I'm in amniotic fluid.
Mm. Well, they were all jazz musicians, weren't they? And they started to, they got together realising they couldn't make any money playing
yeah.
jazz. And,
yeah, as you do.
Yeah, and they did this very successful. And it's like a folk and it's a rock thing. And, you know, but there is a lot of, I wouldn't say jazz sensibilities there at all, but there's a lot of folk sensibilities in it. It's a very lilting melody, isn't it? And very
yeah.
smooth.
It's like it's a certain spice that they've put in the music that makes me feel of like that American life, actually. But beyond that as well, like you say, the roots of real living, and you can almost see the worn heels on people's boots and the dried mud on the mat, you know?
I get that.
Feels very authentic and very homely.
I mean, our show is very eclectic, and, you know, for people who haven't heard us before, it's like this is the stuff that we listen to at home all the time. We have a vinyl player, we listen to everything on vinyl, and these are the tracks that we play. So, you know, it's a snapshot of where we are as people, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Every week. You know?
Yeah. And I think for me, this is my personal snapshot with Midlake. They came over to the UK and they played the End of the Road Festival and stuff. And in those days, it was kind of, when you get an American band coming over, it's a bit like Michael B. Hinson and all those kind of guys that came over, and also John McLapham as well with the Earlies. When you get sort of the influences from America coming over and you get to sort of hang out and be around their music, it brings something quite unique, and it's like going to see, for me, an art house movie at the Corner House Theatre Cinema in Manchester. I came away feeling very like I'd seen through a different pair of eyes. I'd lived a different life in a different culture. It's a bit like when we've lived abroad. I so love to experience what it's like to go into someone's home and see, like in France, blue ceilings and just the different china and the smells and the way people are and their etiquette. I love all that. And for me, this music brings that into my ears and inspires me.
Well, I think the record label, Bella Union, was one of our favourite labels, really. I mean, they do sign some great stuff. And, you know, again, you know, check the artists out on that label because they're always doing something that is just that little bit different, aren't they?
Yeah, and check out their earlier stuff as well. Their first album was 2004, was called Bamnan and Silver Cork. That's a really cool one as well. Mm. Go back to the beginning, and because the lead singer, Tim Smith, has left, and now they've gone into a different kind of session of their productivity. So if you want Midlake from when they first were, and then follow them on their journey and see whether or not you still get them now. But they're cool. Love them.
Well, we're in the middle of a journey at the moment because we're into, is it gig 15 tonight or 14 of 17?
14.
So we're gig 14 out of 17 at the Isle of Man TT. We've played everywhere on the island. Last night we were at the...
Headlining at the Hooded Ram Festival.
Yeah, and the night before we're headlining as well.
So indeed.
We did two nights.
It's been crazy, and we are complete. It's an amazing journey. The crowd have been fantastic. They've been shouting, and there's so much love, and they've really got into the music, haven't they?
Yeah, they have, and we've had some great times. I'm telling you one thing, it is tiring, but we're sort of getting into it now. In the back of that van, I'm like a racing snake with that gear, and we can set up. It's like unbelievable, isn't it? Really fast, you know?
I was 5 and he was 6. We rode on horses made of sticks. He wore black and I wore white. He would always win the fight. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, my baby shot me down. Seasons came and changed the time. When I grew up, I called him mine. He would always laugh and say, remember when we used to play? Bang, bang, I shot you down. Bang, bang, you hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, I used to shoot you down. Music played and people sang. Just for me, the church bells rang. Now he's gone, I don't know why. And till this day, sometimes I cry. He didn't even say goodbye. He didn't take the time to lie. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, my baby shot me down.
Nancy Sinatra and Bang Bang, My Baby Shot Me Down.
Wow. What atmosphere.
I know. I almost don't want to speak because it was so quiet and so beautiful.
Well, Quentin Tarantino is a master of not only direction of incredible movies. He's my favourite director. I'll probably get a lot of stick for this, but, you know, virtually every film that he's ever done, I've just absolutely loved. But in Kill Bill, the music all the way through, rather like Pulp Fiction, was unbelievable. unbelievable. And it really set the scene for each part of that, you know, all his films. Yeah. I mean, he's incredible. And what I love about that, and Starlight knows this, I love tremolo guitar. I adore tremolo guitar, especially a big wobbling tremolo like that. And it's dark sounding. It's not too bright. It sounds like an old Ampeg. So I think it's probably an Ampeg Reverberocket. And at the end, he just gives a little wiggle of Bigsby tremolo.
I heard that, and I was going to ask you, because it flattened.
He did.
Just slightly. It's like someone sat on his head.
He wiggled it out.
Yeah, he wiggled it out.
And my new guitar that has been built by Jim Drake that I've been using for the past 3 weeks, I can't put the bloody thing down. It's incredible. Has a Bigsby on it. And, of course, we have a Reverberocket. So after we've done this show, I think I might whip down and just do a quick bit of bang, bang.
I'll tell you, though, that guitar has completely opened up your playing. You're like this phoenix. You're on fire at the moment. It's beautiful.
Well, thank you.
You are playing wonderfully, but and also with that sound, as you say, this song was actually written by Sonny Bono, who was the husband of Cher. So this is the weird thing, and this is what I wanted to talk to you about, because you don't know this, but so this was Cher released this as a single written by her husband Sonny. Sonny, I said then, so it's not Sonny, sorry, in 1966.
Yep.
April 1966. Yep. Nancy Sinatra released it on her album, How Does That Grab You, April 1966.
Wow.
So they both released the same song at the same time.
Yeah, but you see, the 60s, and it was like a free-for-all, really. I mean, but what an amazing song. And I'll tell you one thing, I bet old Sonny, made a lot of cash from that, the boy.
I know, I was thinking of that with that. And also,
Nancy Sinatra, I mean, she was massively famous, wasn't she?
And she's the eldest daughter of Frank Sinatra and his first wife, Nancy Barbato. Can you hear that plane coming
across
there? Well,
I can, yeah, that's all right.
We've got the windows open. For the TT.
Yeah, it's been so warm over these past couple of weeks, hasn't it, as well? It's been amazing weather here. Incredible.
So if you, so obviously with, it has indeed. So with Nancy, though, you know, I knew her first from These Boots Are Made for Walking, and I watched the video. She's kind of cool. She's a cool-looking woman. But she did go to performance school and dropped out after a year, which often happens. You go for a bit of training, but if you've got industry connections in those days, she just got banged straight in there. And
you couldn't have better connections than
Frank. No, you can't.
In many areas.
And also,
but we won't go there.
Exactly. Indeed. Mm-hmm. And also, the arranger of that song was Billy Strange, and Billy Strange is a member of the Wrecking Crew, and he played on Pet Sounds. And so he was really...
So he played guitar on this as
well?
Oh,
God. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. Played guitar. He played guitar on the Sloop John B as well as on the Pet Sounds album.
Well, Sloop John B is one of my favourite Beach Boys songs of all time. Wow. In fact, we need to put it on.
So it is. Billy Strange.
Yeah. Steve Strange, Billy Strange, all very strange.
We'll be right back. always remember. Yes, I will. 'Cause there was a day that my daddy died. I never got a chance to see him. Never heard nothing but bad things about him. Mama, I'm depending on you. Tell me the truth.
Mama just hung her head and said, son,
Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
all he left us was alone.
Papa never watched a day in his life.
And Mama, some bad talk going around town saying that Papa had 3 outside children and another wife. And that ain't right.
Heard some talk about Papa doing some storefront preaching. Talking about
Papa was a Rolling Stone, the Temptations, B flat all the way through it.
I was about to say that. Did you read my notes?
No. I know, because B flat's very big in my conscience right now.
Oh, yeah.
It being a very troublesome key.
It is indeed, isn't it? That's that song, though, it's long, but apparently it follows in the extended length cinematic soul tradition of the work of Isaac Hayes, who Stax Records and wrote Soul Man with David Porter. So, but it's that extended length, isn't it? It just goes, but it's a mood song, that, isn't it?
Very much so. And, you know, the band were the famous Funk Brothers, the most successful, even more successful than the Wrecking Crew, because they worked with Barry Gordy all the time on the tracks, and James Jameson's that, I think, you know?
Well, he's a man.
He certainly is.
That was number one, you know, in the Billboard Hot 100, and it won 3 Grammys in 1973.
Well, hardly surprised. It's a great song. And produced by, I think he wrote it as well, by Norman Whitfield.
Yeah.
He sounds like a plumber from Accrington, Norman Whitfield. Get Norman on the phone. I've got a burst pipe. But he's obviously really cool. But what I love about that is that it has got that sort of, you know, it is extended, but and one chord all the way through. To make that interesting is really hard, you know.
You've got to layer it up, haven't you?
Yeah, the hand claps, the wah-wah guitar.
That made me laugh, by the way, that wah-wah.
Yeah, because the drum's actually quite... You know, it's like really...
Yeah.
That gives the groove to it, you know. It's great arrangement and lovely vocal, of course.
Well, that was actually originally written by Norman, our mate Norman, for a band called The Undisputed Truth. And which they release as a single in early 1972, and it's on another album called The Law of the Land. But he also produced this long version. There's a 12-minute record on the album for The Temptations. And that's another thing that intrigues me. You know, you can write a song, and then one band can have it, and they do that with it. And then they'll go, oh, I've got this song, maybe you give it a go. You know, that sometimes a song has to wait for the right chemistry with the right approach and the right instrumentation and the right arrangement, basically.
Correct.
Yeah. So, brilliant. What a song.
Well, now that's all right, now, mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, now, mama. Any way you do, but that's all right. That's all right. That's all right now, mama. Any way you do. Well, my mama, she done told me. Papa told me too. my man. Two is four. I love that woman, but I got to let her go. But that's all right. That's all right. That's all right now, mama. Any way you do. Babe, now if you don't want me, why not tell me so? You won't be bothered with me around your house no more. But that's all right. That's all right. That's all right now, mama. Any way you do.
Arthur Big Boy Crudup, That's All Right, the original from 1946.
Big Boy Crudup, original. He wrote that song. Elvis released his version of Arthur's song in 1954, a good 8 years after. Isn't that interesting?
Well, it is.
Sometimes actually, he's called the father of rock and roll, you know, Arthur.
Well, it's not too different than the Elvis version.
No.
Except you got Scotty Moore. What I love in that, incidentally, is that the bass player, I don't know if you've heard it, but when it stops in the middle of the break, the bass player carries on for the first bar and then realises everybody's stopped. And then the next bar, he's all right. But it was all done live. It sounded, and the end, it was a bit rushed. It was a bit, sounded like they were running out of tape. Great, though.
What a version, though. I love that. I love going back to the roots of these things and where these songs come from. And Arthur was born in Forest, Mississippi, you know, to a family of migrant workers. And he went to Chicago as part of a gospel quartet, stayed on, discovered by record producer Lester Melrose, who worked with Sonny Boy Williamson, and Memphis Minnie, who's from Memphis.
Who was playing on the show,
Just check in. And, and apparently, he allegedly found him living in a crate on the street. So in a packing crate. Signed him up to RCA, Victor's Bluebird label. So he toured for a while with Sonny Boy and Elmore James as well. So, I mean, Arthur's great, but he got ripped off. And just briefly, he didn't get paid any royalties, you know, for all the recordings that he did. So he lived most of his life poor and he had to go back to working on the land. And he even turned to bootlegging. So what he'd ended up doing as well is supplying different establishments with bootleg, whatever alcohol it was, and singing as part of the package.
Wow.
And all because he didn't get paid his due royalties.
Unbelievable. And Elvis Presley said, if I had any ambition, it was to be as good as Arthur Crudup. What about that, then, eh?
Now, that is a compliment and a half.
Sure is. But it's the end of the show again.
No way. Time's gone so quick. Okay, if you want to get hold of us, you can catch us on Instagram, Starlight Campbell. That's star LITE. On Twitter, we're at Suzy and Simon. That's SUZY and Simon. And of course, on Facebook.
And the show's available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio. So please tell your friends.
up your old.